No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we continue our expectations series today. We're going to talk about Emery Jones and Patrick Ricard. Joining us to do that is Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Really excited to talk about Emery Jones, who's one of my favorite picks from this year, and Patrick Ricard, who I think is just a underappreciated player. It's always really fun to talk about a guy who does all the dirty work.
Yeah, good player indeed. Let's start with Emery Jones. I don't know that there is an undercard to this one. Two players who are each expected to contribute in some way. Ricard, the elder statesman, so we'll save him for later. Emery Jones, pick number 91 in the draft, 6'5", 315. He just turned 21 in March, which is nice in terms of being a younger draft pick. 34 1/4 inch arms, 5'30 in the 40. No other testing. That's usually an indication that the guy would not be strong in those areas. I would like to know what his bench strength is like. Functional strength almost always with a younger player is an issue, particularly for a lineman.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jones is one of those archetypes at offensive line that's very powerful in his upper body, but not that great of a mover with his legs. And I'm not surprised that a guy like that didn't go ahead and test extensively at the combine, especially, you know, with what he's put on tape at LSU. There wasn't really much for him to gain.
Yeah, I got kind of the prototypical pear shape you do like out of a guard. A little unusual to see that in a tackle. He's got the arms to potentially succeed at either. We'll see about the feet. You know, that's been something that hasn't been ideal in his college career, that didn't really have a top level mirror. I'm going to give you some of the notes I had, and I want you to give the same in terms of what you saw from his college play. But as a pass blocker, I saw a guy who tried to end reps with a bunch of two-handed grips very early. And I see that, and it's not that I don't like that. Obviously, you want to have a whole selection of pitches you want to go to when you're pass blocking. But if a guy over-relies on that, and particularly if he's very dominant against some lesser competition, then I worry about how good that is, how he's going to be able to continue that. Violence in his hand is good, but he's not an alternating strikes guy. That's a big bugaboo for me. He plays two flipper pinball. I mean, he's always using the two flippers at the same time. I like a guy who mixes up his hand usage a lot and in terms of what he does. He knows how to use them independently. I think he stays over his feet pretty well, bends at the knees. That's what you want. You don't want bends at the waist. He waits for a first contact opportunity, which oftentimes is good. At guard, he'll have to strike more, particularly in the run game, but as a pass blocker, I like a guy who at least waits for the moment, so he doesn't have to lunge to make that first contact and get his feet. And it, like I said earlier, not a great natural mirror. A move to guard may have been in his future anyway, but obviously he's a lot more value at tackle and really justifies that third round pick. I'll just stop there. Tell me your thoughts about him. Maybe as a pass blocker, and we can go on as a run blocker too.
Yeah, Jones. I think the first thing I want to say about Jones is he jumped off the screen to me when I was watching his film in 2023, leading up to the 24 draft. He really jumped off the screen to me. You know, obviously I knew more about Jaden Daniels and Will Campbell and the rest of that offense, but I kept being like, who is this right guard that's blowing people off the ball? And then when I looked into his background, having earned a starting job in the SEC as a teenager, starting for 3 years and likely declaring for the draft, that's when I was like, this is a guy who I think the Ravens will really like and who I also really personally like, because I think the strengths that he has, and we could talk about pass blocking, his ability once he latches on to really control encounters. I think, you know, he was able to do that at tackle really well. I think partially just because he was so much because of the length that you would have against some of these edge rushers. But I think what's interesting about him is he was recruited. He was billed as a guard out of high school. And I think that original projection is really where he could shine in the NFL. And I think at guard, it takes him out of kind of the island pass blocking where, like you said, his mirroring becomes his more significant weakness and gets him more in a phone booth. You know, you said he's going to have to strike more playing guard, but that's actually one of his strengths. So I think leaning into one of his strengths and guard would accentuate his strengths and help cover up some of his weaknesses. You know, like you say, there's technique to work on. I love that two flipper pinball phrase. But I think the raw experience, the raw tools with a lot of high level experience that you're getting is a really good combination, both boding well for a transition into guard, but even if he needs to back up, place and right tackle early on in his contract, he at least has the experience that you feel fairly comfortable with putting him out there if an injury goes down. Now, it's not, you know, obviously it's not your ideal situation, especially if you really do want to develop him as a guard, but that versatility, we see that in the season all the time, is so key.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, if his job does not include backup tackle, that might make the pick a lot less enticing because he's, you know, he's that's the more valuable position. He's got to be able to basically man that edge. Some good points. I certainly agree, and I certainly agree that striking is what he does well. Being patient with that is a good thing. Everybody says the same thing about 23 versus 24. Basically, he looked a lot better, and he may have been helped out by the offense around him at LSU in 2023. As a run blocker, I thought, you know, he kind of has a natural right guard spot. If you just picked him and you had your guys lined up all in front of you and you're going to pick the positions, Emory Jones would play right tackle, or he'd play right guard. Mm-hmm. And right guard, he's got the length to handle a defensive tackle through the pivot. He's got some of that lockout ability you see on tape. And while, you know, it's not ideal that you see it every time with two hands and whatnot, it's nice that he's able to control somebody while he pivots him. That's something you want on the right side of a right-handed run game, that you're generally playing the tight end on that side and opening up that side. A job ahead of him in terms of learning to pull, I would say, with the Ravens, that is a kind of a big deal as a run blocker. It's not like he did none of it at LSU, but he certainly didn't do a lot of it in the Ravens. They asked their left guard to pull a ton. My take is that left guard or pretty much nothing in 2025 are kind of the choices for Emory Jones. He'd be unlikely to unseat Daniel Fa'alele unless Daniel Fa'alele unseats himself.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, O-line for the Ravens almost every year seems to be so intriguing. This year with Jones, you know, it's probably between him and Voorhees at left guard. At right guard, you know, I think one of the reasons why they, you know, stick with Fa'alele to get him a second year as a starter, I think part of that is also if he walks in free agency, they might be able to get a comp pick back from him, but that's probably not going to happen if they bench him. And that's not a reason to start a guy, but I think it is a reason to want that guy to start. And I think that can sometimes end up affecting the planning subconsciously even. But I agree. I think in the immediate future, he's probably competing for a left guard spot, and he's going to be a backup right tackle. And, you know, for a third rounder in the first year, that's kind of on the borderline of what you would want. Not bad at all. But I think he really, the labrum injury to me was a big disappointment, because you know, one, my question was, did the Ravens know about this before the draft? And if so, even though I really like Emory Jones a lot and I liked him as a good value at 91, it was a reach compared to the consensus boards. And I also think it is not so great a pick if he is going to miss a significant part of his rookie year due to injury.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same place as you, and I don't know whether the injury is NFIable or not. I don't know when it happened. I presume it happened after the season, but it may have happened during the season, and it didn't impact him. And some of the things he did at the combine, certainly in any way he measured in or in running the 40, it probably wouldn't affect him. But I'm going through this right now in terms of having a shoulder injury, and it impacts your life in a lot of ways that really suck. So he was at rookie minicamp and doing drills kind of behind the offensive lineman. So he's trying to mirror what they were doing, but he wasn't getting in there. So while Carson Vinson is getting coaching on every play from Warhop, he's not in there getting that. And that's really a bummer. That's a lot of developmental time lost. And there's no, you can't make up for that. Like to say, well, it's okay, we can have him on IR for the year and he can work on his body because he needed to get stronger anyway, and blah, 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 blah. That really doesn't get it done. If you don't have the on-the-field work, gain that muscle memory, building the good habits, I think you lose a lot.
Yeah, it's something we see. I think we see it with rookies in Baltimore pretty consistently, although I think it's pretty consistently happens with rookies across the league. You know, these minor knocks that you put, you know, whether it's something like a labrum tear or just like minor knocks that you're picking up over the summer, that transition, that first summer transition to the NFL is so important in terms of getting up to speed, new playbook, level of competition, schedule, the standard you have to hold yourself to. There's a lot in there that rookies pick up in their first year. And it's hard to do that if you're not doing the full package of practice and team meetings and everything else, because it really takes, you know, mental discipline to establish a routine and all that stuff. And so I completely agree. I think, you know, it is probably my main question with this pick is this something that came up pre-draft? And at that point, you know, what was the decision process at 92 that you felt like, you know, a red shirt-ish rookie year was possible? Is that still worth it for a third round pick?
Right. You know, the standard is you talked about like what might be acceptable. We're going to get to a good and a great year later. And that's kind of what the whole point of the show is. But when I look at a rookie player like this, and particularly one who's not in the first two rounds, in the first two rounds, you're still hoping to get a starter with either of those picks. Like second round picks are Kelechi Osemele and Roger Rosengarten and some other guys they've had over the years. Not too many really in the second round for offensive linemen, the more I think about it. But it might be Adam Terry. Was he drafted with the last pick in the second round? He would have been a guy who didn't work out, obviously, if that was the case. But you kind of hope for a C minus or a C season in their first year, and that's a lot to build on. If you start there, you've got a great base. You're going to grow to be you have the runway to grow to be a very good player. You won't always make it, and most of the guys, it's not even that quick. You know, Ryan Jensen took him a couple of years to get on the field, and then he became a very good player. You know, we could pick the other players like Matt Skura and what they got on a little bit earlier and they were not playing quite as well, but they had runway to still get better. So when I look at when I get very excited about a lineman when he scores like a C or C minus in my system in the first year in terms of what he's going to be by the end of year four. With Emory Jones, if he doesn't get on the field this year, I'd be a lot more concerned. So the Ravens, I'm sure they understand what they want to see out of Jones in the first year. They'll be happy with the practice in a certain way. But another way, I think they really need to see live snaps because there's nothing like them in practice. I mean, you know, we go to camp and there's no live fire going on. The only the closest thing you have are those joint practices, which are nice, but they're fraught with their own perils of, you know, teams getting after each other in a way you don't want. You got some preseason games against really questionable context. And then you got the regular season and when that starts. And it's just, there just is not a lot of live fire for offensive linemen if they're not getting it.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about runway, and I really like that phrase when it comes to Jones because we talked about his age and the starting experience. And, you know, the Ravens have had a tendency in the last couple of years to, you know, they'll invest in a guard, you know, Zeitler, Ben Cleveland in the third round, but it's largely day three picks and cheaper veteran signings. And they then try and recycle those out for comp picks, you know, in future years, that position has kind of become one of their sources of comp picks. But I think Jones has the potential and has the ceiling to be a player that might be worth re-signing. That, you know, it seems like right now they're just kind of not in the sign of re-signing any of their guards. They haven't re-signed one of their guards in I can't remember how long. And Jones, to me, could be good enough at guard. And obviously, if Grosgaard eventually switches to left tackle when Stanley retires and Jones starts at right tackle, he's obviously worth re-signing. But I think he could be good enough to be worth re-signing at guard. But you have to see him get to that point by the end of his third year. And if he misses his rookie year, then you really only have 2 years to get that development and see if you're going to be able to get to that point. Might have been a convoluted way to say it. But basically, you know, this developmental time and the transition time is so key. You know, he is a young player. There is good character feedback on him. But, you know, you want to have that full rookie year for a player that's so young and really does have a lot of potential.
I'm looking here prior to Kelechi Osemele. You have to go back to 2006 to find Chris Chester, who was a guard center, taken, he's out of Oklahoma. And then 2005, Adam Terry was taken with pick 64, so his last pick of the second round. Those guys got a chance earlier. Chester was in that Tampa Bay game in 2006 at the very end of it right away. He was a very good lineman, and he ended up being a really good lineman when he was with the Redskins, but he was a good lineman with the Ravens. The problem was the Ravens just had one of the greatest interior lines that's ever been put together at that point. And they really with Yanda Grubbs and Burke all together. That was just too good for him to break into. And he had to be let go at the end of the period.
The way things are shaping up right now, it seems like Jones is going to have that chance next year to start. He could have a very real chance to start next year. And if he's starting in his second year, that really obviously just it's good value for the Ravens to have multiple, you know, starting years from a rookie, from a draft pick. But I think in terms of his development, you know, it's not a position where the Ravens have so many good interior offensive linemen that there isn't room for him to play.
Yeah, I think that's really the key, is that there are not so many good ones. And some of the quality of their current offensive linemen is maybe preventing them from making some longer term signings. And at two different levels, my Linderbaum thing is out there on a lot of things. It's just I can't pay him the top, like a record setting contract at center. If I'm the Ravens, I'm not doing it. I'll go 16 million. I'll go maybe a little bit higher than that and go to 17 million and match that absurd Cam Jurgens deal, which doesn't make any sense in the context of other centers in the league, but I'm not going to 18 or 19 million and having him match Creed Humphrey in terms of dollars, which means there's probably an opening there next year. Not one the Ravens want to have, not one I'm excited about, you know, losing the leader of the line, but one I'm not willing to expend those dollars in that way. And Daniel Falele is an interesting case because I don't know where he and the Ravens are in terms of contract talks. DaCosta made a arcane comment a few weeks ago about having a lot of balls in the air. Probably was referring to Derrick Henry in part because that was the first contract that got signed after that. But you don't have a lot of balls. That would be one ball in the air. My guess is there's three or four others. And maybe a Lamar extension is part of that. Mm-hmm. And that's holding up things like a Linderbaum deal or a Hamilton deal or an Owe deal or a Daniel Fa'alele deal. Could have been an Ardarius Washington deal was on the table. I think that's probably off now, but it could have been Isaiah Likely. I mean, there's so many third-year players they need to sign. Next year is going to be a very tough free agency year for the Ravens if they don't get some of that done in advance. But here's my point. You got two players on the line right there. Linderbaum, who might have priced himself out of Baltimore either by expectation or by the market, whichever it is. And then you've got at right guard, you got a player in Fa'alele who his people may or may not be telling him that he's too good to sign a deal for, say, 3 years, $12 million. And the Ravens may be looking at the other side saying, you know, we'd love to take some risk off the table, get him a little cheap a year early, and you potentially get a real value if he develops into something better than he is right now. But on the other thing, they might be saying he really clogs up our system. Because if we have Fa'alele, he can only play right guard, and a player like Emory Jones is then blocked from one of his natural positions. might or might not actually have a higher ceiling than Faalele. But you're taking a risk if you're the Ravens by bringing Faalele back for more years. I'm not saying it's a bad risk, by the way. I think it can be properly priced. If it's 3 years, $12 million for Daniel Faalele, I'm all over it. I'm doing that in a heartbeat. If it's 3 years, $18 million, now I'm not as sure.
Yeah, I think a couple of things there. I think one, having so many balls in the air, I think is one of the reasons why Jones feels like such a natural successor for Faalele at right guard, is because Faalele would not be a priority extension. His extending him would be something more like when they extended Broderick Washington a couple years ago. I believe it was like maybe even during camp when that extension got done, because they couldn't get anything done with Nnamdi Madubuike, and they still wanted to make some, they still wanted to, you know, get ahead on their cap and plan for the future and all that. And maybe free up a little space if they needed any in-season money. But, I think that's the thing. Is Faalele going to take less money? There's a question about whether or not he really belongs at guard or tackle, which we definitely don't have to get into now. But I think there are a lot of factors with him at play, and the fact that mainly the fact that he is a starting offensive lineman on one of the best offenses in the NFL. And we have seen that the Ravens' former guards just go get a lot of money in free agency by virtue of largely playing with Lamar Jackson. John Simpson, Ben Powers, McCary, like I obviously have respect for those guys, and they played well when in Baltimore, but I'm not sure I looked at any of the contracts they signed and, that was a Ravens inflated price that they got on the market, and the Ravens got compensatory picks out of that. So I think they're going to be very much monitoring, how does Faalele present to the rest of the league? Will other teams have significant interest in him in free agency? Because if so, they'll collect their comp pick, move on, put Emory Jones at right guard and keep that machine churning.
Yeah, part of my problem with Faalele is he does fit into the sweet spot, and Ardarius Washington did too, of a player you can get cheap. Chuck Clark came extremely cheap when the Ravens got him on his second deal. He's a guy, because he's not a star already, like an Owe is going to really cost the Ravens if they get him. Travis Jones is probably going to cost the Ravens more than they want to pay him. Isaiah Likely is going to cost the Ravens a ton. And I'm afraid the two sides may be miles apart in terms of what their contract expectations are for it not to be taken care of already. But, it's obviously a balancing game. Some players have to go, and Faalele may be one of the guys who has to. I'm excited about how he played the last five games last year, so I'm looking forward to this year. And I wouldn't unseat him for a player like Emory Jones. I'm more interested in seeing, can Emory Jones play left guard? Can he learn to pull? I think that's much more realistic. Faalele, we know what his weaknesses are, and we also know that we can live with them. As they exist right now, we know they can live with them. As they existed in the last five games of the season, there's no doubt about it. We know we can live with them. Guy cannot move at all. He is a complete triumph of function over form. He looks terrible doing something well, which is very unusual. It's just very unusual. And he's a good pass blocker. He doesn't get penalties. Those are critical elements. And the fact that he doesn't get into level two and be particularly decisive or quick or anything like a decent run block or even in a zone scheme has not been a hindrance for the Ravens offense as a whole. I mean, the Ravens offense is the best it's ever been last year, or just about anyway. And this was, with Daniel Faalele playing a very prominent role.
Yeah. And I think ultimately that's, If you mentioned his agency saying that he could get more money elsewhere if they're looking at the market, I think offensive line, there's just such a premium being paid there, especially for a guy who you could flex out to tackle if you saw that potential in him. Ultimately, I think Jones was largely drafted as a Faalele successor. I think the injury is really gonna hinder him from factoring in at left guard this year, on top of learning and improving on his footwork. I know we'll get to the exact expectations in a minute here, but I just think that Jones is a pick that you're going to need him sometime in the next 4 years. You just don't know exactly when he's going to start. If he was healthy right away, I think he's pushing for a starting guard spot. But again, I think Falele is good enough that it's worth keeping him at right guard for the development and the value you might get at the end of the season.
Yeah. All right. Some things about Emory Jones that are kind of nice. He brings length and size to that left guard position if they were to put him there, which would pair well with Linderbaum. Linderbaum did very well with enormous guards to both sides. It's when they got a little smaller with McCary and Voorhees. And Voorhees isn't really really small, but he's got kind of shortish arms and a very lean frame for a guard, which made him, you know, more of a pushable object than you would like him to be. With Emory Jones, I don't think you have that, that same level of concern there. I've got a couple of things more from college. His penalty rate is a little high, but it's given the SEC context, I'm not too worried about it. One every 136.6 snaps. Functional strength, as we talked about, was real important. I think that the Ravens, if I had to say something else too, is that they don't really have an issue coming up at tackle until 2027. If we cross our fingers and knock on wood and hope everything works out with Ronnie Stanley and Rosengarten until then, that's really both of them. Because I mean, Rosengarten's got to be able to prove he can play on the left side at some point in order for Jones to get the obvious position for him, which I think would be at right tackle.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of the interesting thing too, is, you know, they have Carson Vinson in this draft class, who that is very much a draft and develop left tackle. After extending Stanley, they also will have multiple bites at the draft apple to find other options as a successor. I expect them to continue to kind of look for left tackle successors until they really feel like they've landed on one. I think in an ideal world, in a like 100% perfect world, Carson Vinson's ready to go by the time Ronnie Stanley retires and he takes over there, and Jones is already at right guard and Rosengarten stays at right tackle. Great. I think in a less ideal but still pretty good world, Rosengarten figures out how to play on the left side, and Jones is able to slot in at right tackle after maybe playing guard in 26, and they keep recycling guys through the interior. You know, it's just you have an offense, a running game in particular. You can afford to invest less in the interior O-line. You have Lamar Jackson, you have Derrick Henry. I think that's a wise decision, especially we've seen where this market has continued to just explode, and guys who are just respectfully not worth $20 million a year are getting $20 million a year on the open market. And that's, you know, if the Ravens can continue to identify guys through the draft that can contribute there throughout their rookie contract. And Jones is an example of a guy who might contribute early at guard before sticking at tackle. And I think that strategy in particular of, you know, okay, we don't have the immediate need at tackle, but we, you know, we get a guy who can fit, help, maybe help with our short-term needs and our long-term needs at two different positions. Obviously, I really like Emory Jones, and I'm very excited about this pick.
All right. Well, let's talk about what a good season is for Emory Jones. And as usual, you define it any way you like. Mine is the 60th and 80th percentile of what I think are a reasonable set of outcomes. What's a good season?
So I kind of like the way you have it set up. So I'll do something similar. A good season, I think, starts with him being healthy, and I think it starts with him being able to play. I would say at least half the season he appears in the game, and really ideally he's healthy. He's available for the whole season. I don't know the exact status of his injury. I'm not sure how realistic that is, or if that's more of an 80th percentile outcome. But yeah, still good season. I think he competes for, but loses the left guard job to Andrew Voorhees. I think he is the immediate right tackle backup. And, you know, again, ideally he doesn't play, but a good season for him was anytime he's needed to play right tackle, he steps in, does a capable job, you know, like he did, preferably closer to his 2023 film than his 2024 film. I would say that's a good season. He appears in about half the games. To me, the crucial thing is his health and his ability to have I think John Harbaugh said he should be able to participate in training camp at some point, but yep. He was pretty, that's always very, very malleable, very nebulous. Yep. And so I think part of that good outcome, I think, with him being healthy by the regular season. You know, even if he needs the extra time, you know, that is really, again, really not ideal for a third round pick, and something that just I personally wonder if the Ravens knew about before or after. But I think, you know, I also think a good season, you know, if Falele were to go down, Jones would also be the guy I would want to try and step up at right guard. That's kind of the other note is that he, you know, I'm not expecting him to earn the guard jobs, but I'm expecting him to really potentially be able to back up three positions. And I think that would be a good season for a third round pick.
Fair enough. And by the way, when Harbaugh was asked that question, it was at rookie minicamp, and they asked him, I don't know who asked him the question, is will we see him this summer at OTAs? And Harbaugh said he'll be ready for training camp, I guess, but does that mean there's no chance for him to be here for OTAs? I forget who was answering the question, but somebody who was willing to ask a follow-up injury question that he'd already kind of asked. And he said, well, we're not going to rush it, you know, kind of thing. And that tells me right away, if I'm reading between the lines on Harbaugh, if I'm handicapping how he's responding to that question, the start of the season is in jeopardy for Emory Jones when I hear that coming out of it. But I've got a good season that looks fairly Pollyannaistically at this and says, active for 12 plus games, competes with Voorhees for the left guard spot, plays 150 plus snaps on a rotational or emergency basis at or near the league average. And I, just parenthetically, most round three and later linemen start with a C-minus kind of a season under optimal circumstances. I mean, it's very rare you have anybody do any better than that in their first year who's the kind of pedigree Jones has. The Ravens have him as a central figure in their 2026 line plans, wherever that might be, including a potential move to right guard.
How about Gleason? I just had one note on your thing. I think, you know, I think that is, again, a good season out of him is getting him ready for 26 more than it is having him contribute in 25 on the 60th percentile outcome. I think that, you know, that's really the crucial thing about this season is his health and getting him ready for a starting role next year.
Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead. Move on. Take us to a great season.
Great season. He takes over one of the two guard jobs. I think that the Ravens would like to stick with Falele for this year, but whether it's injury or just if he can't make the strides that you would expect going into his second year starting at guard, you know, first year, there were a lot of things that needed to be cleaned up because it was first year playing the position. And, you know, considering all the circumstances, I think he probably was unfairly maligned for a little too much of the year. I think he made some very, very clear strides by the end of the year. And if he's able to continue that trajectory, I think he should be able to hold off Jones, but that's no certainty. And so I think Jones could be in play for either of the starting guard spots. And I think a great season would be him taking over one of them at some point, Again, I think the injury makes him winning a guard job out of training camp relatively unlikely, even as a great outcome. I just think it would be very difficult. The Ravens are, you know, they sit their rookies, they go with incumbents. They do, you know, Harbaugh has a history, especially at guard, of not necessarily always starting the youngest guys. And so I think that him taking over between the injury and, you know, being a rookie, I think taking over one of the two guard jobs at some point during the season, showing that he is good enough for that, either to outplay Falele or Voorhees, would be a great season for him. That would probably result in him starting, you know, 10 plus games in 2025 at guard. But crucially, like we just talked about, that one, he stays healthy, completely healthy. He has a fairly, he's able to participate fully in training camp. Maybe not from the very beginning. Again, it's hard to handicap exactly where he'll be health-wise, but he is able to participate in training camp. He is fully healthy for the regular season. And in terms of his development, I think, you know, we talked about some of those weaknesses. If he's at guard, he's learning to pull, and he's working on his footwork, and he's, you know, figuring out how to just shore up his technique and specifically get used to blocking kind of in those closer quarters as a guard. The thing I also think he's going to, I forgot to mention this in weaknesses, and I guess I'll mention it now. The other thing I think he'll have to work on at guard is because of that lack of athleticism and footwork, picking up stunts and twists and having guys come across his face on those, I think is something he'll have to improve on as well at guard. I think it's something that we, you know, we could see Falele struggle with at the beginning of last year, and I could see Jones, you know, having some similar issues. But all of that really is for building for 2026, which is when he would take over a starting spot, presumably at right guard. If he sticks at left guard for a lot of 25, he might just stay there in 26 since he's already comfortable there.
Yeah, it certainly could work out that way. Here's my great season. I said takes the left guard job at some point in half one by practice.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
This is Michael Rosenbaum.
Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Injury or underperformance from Voorhees. That could be the right guard spot too. You're absolutely right. When you say it could be either spot, plays 500 plus snaps at approximately a league average level. That would be unbelievably good if he were able to do that. Not unbelievably good, but it would be 80th percentile result. Handles pulling and zone blocking solidly. I think that's going to be a big change for him, but it's something that he's got very good offensive line coaching that has been good in the past. At least Joe D was, in terms of teaching less than fully athletic people how to pull. So I think that has a chance to work out. Learns to use his hands independently and take a step forward as a pass blocker. That's a very big deal. And I think that it's so important for him to be on the field to do that, obviously, to learn to do that properly. And the Ravens' only quandary is where he fits best in 2026. Not a question, does he have a starting role? It's where they're going to play him. They want him at right tackle. They want him at right guard. He may even be, if Linderbaum departs in particular, he's one of their big pieces. They're trying to decide where he fits best. And they have to figure out, well, okay, we've got a new center coming in, and do we need Jones and another big guy? How do we need to set this up to make it easy as possible for that new center, if that comes to pass?
Yeah. I think ideally in 26, it's, you know, Stanley at left tackle, Rosengarten at right. And I really do agree with you that Jones's best fit is right guard or right tackle. Mm-hmm. He'll have to learn left guard, and there'll be, you know, there's some, you know, flip sides, flipping the sides of his technique he'll have to work on to do that. But I also just think particularly his body type is really, I think, best for a right guard or right tackle.
Well, the Ravens have incredibly low mobility in their offensive line right now. It's the lowest I can really ever remember. But, they've had great pullers in the past. Guys who are very natural left guards like Ben Grubbs was a great puller. And Marshall Yanda was great from the right side, but he could pretty much do it all. And then they've had guys who were unathletic in Bozeman and Hurst that could learn to do that left guard pulling job and did a very high volume of pulls during the Roman era. So I think even a player like Jones, who that's not his strong suit, can get there. I don't think he's going to have the physical limitations that a Falele has to ever be used really as a puller. I think Falele is just too big and too clunky. Ben Cleveland may have been that way too. That may have been part of what held him back. We don't have a ton of pull information from his background to really look at, but I think Emory Jones has a chance to make it. And I think if you're going to make it anywhere, you're going to make it in Baltimore, because with the offensive line coaching here.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I've said, the thing that has always stood out to me is earning a starting job as a teenager in the SEC, keeping it as part of one of the best offensive lines in recent college football memory. I think four of those guys got drafted this past weekend. He is just the kind of player that I bet on and that I think is going to succeed in the NFL.
All right, well, let's move on. Talk about Patrick Ricard. He'll be 31. Let's see, we're recording this on the 26th. It's actually tomorrow. Patrick Ricard will turn 31. Signed a 1-year deal. His deal is a special qualified veteran contact. So he makes $2.9 million, but he only counts $1.4 million against the cap, which is a really nice deal to keep a player like Ricard around. And I think the frictions are there now to keep Ricard in Baltimore for the rest of his career, as long as that might be. I thought they might give some of that money, by the way, to Tylan Wallace, and they didn't end up doing that. And fortunately, they kept both players. But either of those guys would have qualified for the qualified vet money.
Yeah, the 4-year qualifying benefit, for those of you who don't know, it basically allows a team to pay, to have a player's cap number be lower than the actual number of money that they get. They've used it, I think they used it on Malik Harrison last year, I believe. And the Ravens obviously love to use everything in every cap trick in the book to keep, especially their veteran guys. And you can split up that money between, I believe, two different players if you want to. And so the Ravens gave all of the extra money to Ricard, and they kept Tylan Wallace on a deal that I believe has void years in it, if I remember correctly.
Four void years.
Yes. And so, while we're talking about the contract thing, I think it sets up something very interesting for next year, which is how they want to continue to use this benefit. Ben Cleveland was another guy they could have used it on, but I don't think he would have had the market where they needed to incentivize it that much. But Charlie Kolar is a guy who would be eligible for the VSB next year. And you might come to a point where you have to decide between Tylan Wallace, Patrick Ricard, and Charlie Kolar. And I think it just sets up some interesting decisions for the Ravens. Using it all on Ricard this year, I think, is partially also just they do right by their guys. I think they do try to do right by players who give a lot for them, and Ricard is one of them.
Judging by past recent history of contracts at tight end, I don't see any way they're able to sign Kolar for that kind of money. I think he will, the Josh Oliver deal being a very obvious one. I mean, he's about as similar a comp as you can find for Kolar in the league. Kohler's been playing behind a couple of guys who are very good. I think there's still a lot of confidence in him as a receiver, and when he's been throwing the ball, he's been very effective. He's more of an inline guy, and those guys are highly valued. So
I think you're right.
Yeah, it could be 3 for 18 or 3 for 16 for Kolar. 3 for 20 wouldn't shock me if he ended up getting that on the open market. But with Ricard, I think the price is right on Ricard this year. It might be right on Ricard next year. And if it's not Ricard, it'll be somebody else. They'll make sure they use it. It's interesting. His snaps under Roman were 747 in 2022. And he's taking a big cut in snaps, but he still played 495 snaps exactly, by the way, in each of the last 2 years under Monken. So it's not like Monken has not been able to find a use for Ricard, which I'm very thankful for. You get a new offensive coordinator and you think they're going to completely change everything. But Monken has been a wonderful blend of extending the offense and keeping some of the really valuable DNA the team has.
You know, I think that was what Monken was billed as coming out of Georgia, as a guy who really worked hard to adapt his scheme to his personnel. And that doesn't mean he doesn't teach people things and get people in different roles, but he does really try to take, you know, his offensive philosophy and then I think kind of shift the levers and accentuate certain parts depending on what personnel he has and how that fits to their strengths. And Ricard's a great example of that. I think coming into that season, we were like, all right, this is the test year of, you know, is Ricard going to be able to find a role in this offense? And, you know, just using him as a movable blocker, I think, you know, was such an effective and smart way to use him. I think having him as in a lot more inline work, I think maybe a higher percent of his snap might have been in line compared to Roman. I'd have to double check that. But yeah. I just think Monken got creative, especially using him in motion. You know, it's kind of silly when he uses him in motion. He goes, runs a route. When he's obviously not getting the ball, but it all serves a purpose. And I think that, you know, Ricard being, you know, he's always doing the dirty work. There have been games where Ricard is like a focal point of the game plan to win the whole game on offense, like the Bills game in particular. Some of those traps and those whams, Ricard was the guy who was responsible for the key block on a number of those plays. And so I think that's also a sense of, you know, Monken's ability to actually make him a featured blocker, which is not something you see super often in the NFL when teams really make a blocker arguably the featured part of a play.
Yeah, it's for one thing, he's a critical element of misdirection as well, an underrated part of misdirection. One of the reasons the Lamar Jackson boots are quite successful, and even though they watch Jackson like a hawk, the backside edge defender is almost never fooled on those plays, but he has a lot of athleticism to avoid those guys where Flacco needed the deception to work, for example. But Jackson, there's still usually only one guy chasing after him. But the fact that you're starting with a zone scheme going in the opposite direction that Jackson is booting, and it's got Ricard as a lead blocker and Henry or anyone really behind him, you know, trying to run the football, that scares the living bejesus out of a defensive unit to really get into position and hold down the fort. And it creates a big space budget then for Lamar to work with on the other side of the field. So the Ravens have a lot of ways they can misdirect, but Ricard is definitely a part of that. And he's made his fifth Pro Bowl in the last 6 years this last year. And the 1 year he didn't make the Pro Bowl, he's all AP1. So it's not like he's been the most consistently honored fullback. Juszczyk is right there as well. He's had a bunch of AP1s too. I wouldn't claim that he's a better fullback necessarily than what Juszczyk gives the Niners offense, but he's certainly extremely good at a dying position, and worth every penny of his contract in terms of the context that he delivers to the Ravens.
Yeah, Ricard. You know, I always think it's, you know, always fun to mention that the undrafted rookie, a defensive tackle out of Maine, the Maine Brown Bears, and, you know, becomes a fullback in Baltimore. I forget exactly what season his snap count started to flip. He started fullback as a rookie. I think it was in his third year in 2019 where he played he had a 14% snap share on defense and a 30% snap share on offense. And then after that, he was pretty much an offense only guy. But it was cool briefly to have a two-way player. And I think there have been times when the Ravens defensive line has been so thin that I have wondered to myself, you know, do you get Patrick Ricard in there for a couple early down snaps just to give some of those guys a break in the fourth quarter? I don't think the Ravens are actually going to ever do that unless it's a true injury, it depleted emergency. But I have wondered that because of he's just such a happy warrior in the trenches, and that style of play is very reminiscent of, you know, the Ravens fullbacks in the past, you know, Vonta Leach, these guys who just, they knew their roles in the offense and how crucial they were and just blew guys off the ball when they got the chance. So that's kind of the maybe more emotional look at Ricard, who's a player that, you know, I've really just come to appreciate over the years. But in terms of on the field, you know, moving forward, him as being essentially a purely blocking piece is limiting to what the Ravens can do with him. Now, his ability to line up at all different contribute as a blocker in the passing and the running game from a bunch of different spots is what keeps him on the field. But, you know, this is a big year for the Ravens tight end slash fullback room with Andrew. All four of them are in, you know, are only signed through this season. You know, we talked about Kolar. You mentioned likely could have a big price tag because I think he knows what he could be if he is the feature tight end. And Andrews, it's not like he's gotten worse. He had his most efficient season of his career last year. He's just, you know, didn't have to play so many snaps because there's so much quality around him that, you know, he didn't need to play a crazy snap share. And so, you know, Ricard, I think the reason he's such a good guy to re-sign is because, you know, he's can kind of fill that third blocking tight end role as well as that fullback role in the offense. It's kind of what he already does. You know, Kolar has picked up more of the inline work last year, but in the instance that the Ravens are only able to keep maybe one of those three guys, keeping Ricard around, especially on a cheap contract, to me is a really good way to make sure that your blocking roles are taken care of.
Well, he's the easiest one to re-sign, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the cheapest and only requires a 1-year deal, and you get VSB money comes into play and whatnot. So you have advantages there. But the tight end group is extremely concerning, and the receiving component of the tight end group having been so good with the 143.5 passer rating last 2 years combined, 30 touchdowns, one interception, figuring out how you retain one, draft one, sign Ricard again, and maybe you're working to see if there's either a bigger role for Kolar or there's a price tag you can come to an agreement on. They've made a very difficult puzzle for themselves. I think they really did want to trade Andrews if the price was right. I think all the signals were there this offseason to tell you that. They've almost said as much, but it didn't happen. Obviously, they never got the right price. I think the hidden thing is they probably would have been willing to trade likely too. My guess is that the team already has a good sense one way or another if whether or not they can sign likely. And if they're way far away, I mean, it does make sense to start to unwind that if it could have led to a draft pick. It's now too late for a draft pick to help the 2025 Ravens, so it doesn't make any sense at this point. And unfortunately, that's going to give them a bigger puzzle to solve after this year.
Yeah, and this isn't a team. I personally would be really surprised if they traded away likely at this point. It's not a team that, you know, really
on draft night, Nick. I'm not suggesting it at this point at all.
Yeah, no, and I because it's just there's not a team that moves on from, you know, talent that's going to contribute in a big way this year. I think that they, you know, you said they didn't get the value for Andrews they wanted. The last two major tight end trades were TJ Hockenson and Darren Waller. Both were, like, I think compensatory third round value. I guess I'm not shocked that no one came up that high for Andrews. I could have seen maybe a pick swap with something close to that value going down. But you know, it's tough because it's not like you can, you know, you can't really, you, I mean, obviously you can ask anyone to take a discount, but Mark Andrews has no reason to take anything below what his last APY is. And likely knows that if he was tight end one in this offense for, you know, a couple years, he'd be, you know, close to the top of the market at the position. And I think it's tough for the Ravens to even accommodate that. There is a world in which they, Andrews and likely both walk because they both want so much money, and you end up taking, you end up re-signing Kolar and, you know, kind of figuring it out from there. I would be surprised by that, but I think it's within the realm of possibility when you have a guy like Ricard that you feel so confident in as an inline blocking tight end as well.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe all three walk if that's the case, and they're not able to take care of Kolar either. But the Ravens have a history of trading young players on their first contract, and particularly recently and in the DaCosta years, they traded Hayden Hurst after 2 years, which was a second round pick and was good value, good unwinding of that 2018 draft. They unwound that draft further when they traded Orlando Brown after 3 years to the biggest rival in the AFC. I mean, they needed to make sure they got value out of that pick. And they did, and then they traded Marquise Brown, of course, for the pick that ended up being Tyler Linderbaum eventually. So, they have a history of doing it, and everybody, I get this a unnecessary overflowing amount of vitriol from the Ravens fan base whenever I suggest the notion of trading likely. There's a right player right price in every situation. I mean, there's some players where you don't have any duplication at the position. You'd really hope that the Ravens wouldn't trade them. But, you know, in the case of Likely and Andrews, there clearly is some overlap in terms of responsibility there. That's not creating a problem. It's a good problem to have, but it's also some where you could get, you know, it's an 80-20 rule situation where you very well, the best way to deal with the player is to trade him a year early rather than wait for a compensatory pick down the line and get what I think would be a lot of value for a player like Likely.
Yeah, I also think there's a possibility that the Ravens just as a team value tight ends higher than other teams do. And that's one of the reasons why they couldn't get the value they wanted for Andrews or, you know, even Likely if they heard any offers on him. And the same reason why, you know, they may not get all of the comp pick value out of them that they really want or expect to next offseason. And this, you know, we talk, I like to talk about comp picks partially because I think the Ravens using it as a pet project to get more picks is just amusing to me on some level, I think. But I also think we were a little bit too active talking about comp picks, and I'm probably partially to blame for this because you can't really quite project, like, there are free agents you might sign. It's hard to really exactly balance out what the, you know, what you're going to be able to get from, you know, get from these guys. And, you know, are you going to avoid, you know, signing a player to preserve a comp pick? If you, there are a lot of extra complications that go into that, and comp picks are just by no means guaranteed things. And so I think that, you know, that means that it does set them up to be in a really tough position where, you know, it seems like they value the tight ends higher than other teams do. And, you know, agents know that, players know that. And so it does put them in an interesting position.
Well, they could franchise Likely, which is another possibility. But let's not get into the entire tight end situation because we're really talking about Patrick Ricard right here. You know, one of the things that still remains interesting about the Monken offense is that it's still by far the heaviest in the NFL in terms of the combination of fullback, tight end, OL6 per snap basis. They're still by far the heaviest offense in the NFL and one of the heaviest in recent years, right up there with the 2019 Vikings, I think it is, are the other team that actually competed in terms of heft. The 2022 Ravens were the heaviest of all time. And it's like not close. It has been decades in a relative sense since anybody's played as many of those positions on a per snap basis. They were up like around 2.35 or something for the entire season. And that's never been seen, but it's great to see them still using the tight end in a big way. But more importantly, even with reduced targets, the entire tight end group has been extraordinarily efficient in terms of their receiving.
Yeah, and they, you know, they can line up in line, they line up in the slot. The Ravens will put Likely and Andrews in motion a lot. And you know, Ricard obviously is not a receiving threat. I think I really enjoy it when the Ravens kind of funnel him a touchdown at some point in a blowout. I think it happens about once a year where there's a blowout and they manage to just get Ricard the ball in the end zone by, you know, whatever means necessary when they're down at the goal line. And I really appreciate that. A guy like that, of course, deserves to score a touchdown every now and then. But I think it's an interesting question about, you know, Monken's offense moving forward. That you raise, you know, one of the things that has been very much talked about Monken's desires on offense is to have an athletic five-man pass protection unit. And last year, he hasn't really been able to do that because of the offensive, you know, the quality that he struggled with at offensive line, particularly having, you know, Rosengarten as a rookie last year who needed, you know, I remember we talked multiple times about just the raw amount of help that Rosengarten was getting throughout the year. It lessened later in the year, but, you know, especially early on, he was getting so much help. And Ricard was a big part of that, Ricard's ability to line up in line. And so you wonder if, you know, if Monken is able to move a step towards, and this is conjecture, you know, Monken has never really talked about his offense like this, obviously, but it's largely if he's able to move a step towards that more five-man athletic pass protection unit where you do have more frequent plays where five eligible receivers are going out to run routes. That is going to reduce Ricard's snap count further, I think, because he's just not a route runner. He's not a receiving threat. And if you do have, you know, plays where you have five guys running routes and not the fifth guy is not blocking and then releasing, but he's actually running a route, that's just not Ricard. And so I'm curious, I think this year, We'll see if, I think this is probably a clear year to see if, you know, Monken is really moving towards that, you know, more five man protections, less help and trying to use all of the space on the field. Ricard just doesn't really contribute to that in the passing game. I actually think he does a tremendous amount to open up space in the running game, like you said, via motion and misdirection. But in the passing game, I think that's where his, you know, that's obviously where he contributes less, and that's where, if the Ravens are more comfortable with, you know, their five-man pass protection, he'll see less snaps as help on the offensive line.
I don't disagree with any of that, by the way. The what he's really, they need to have less help for Rosengarten this year. They need to, first of all, they need to derive more value from Rosengarten by having him take on more responsibility as a second-year player. He's another player, you know, starting with a pretty successfully scored season, as I would see. If his PFF scores it, they score him higher as well. But the truth of the matter is, there's so much help involved. It's really hard to get a read on exactly who he is as a pass blocker. That he's got, so he's got certainly some weaknesses at that. And I hope he can take on more responsibility, because that's a big part of development in terms of that. But in terms of Ricard, he's coming into his 10th season with the Ravens in 2026. So he's here for 25. That'll be 9 years, 2026. Where does he fit in into the Ravens pantheon? Is he a guy that you think makes sense for the Ring of Honor at this point, given his tenure? And he certainly made a lot more Pro Bowls than the most similar player in Ravens history. It might be Kelly Gregg in terms of, you know, playing a long time at a good level.
Yeah, I think there's an appreciation, like I said, for a guy like Ricard in a number of ways. But Ravens have maybe the strongest history of fullbacks in the NFL in the 21st century. And Ricard being, you know, a fan favorite, I think he's obviously beloved within the building, because he is so willing, like I said, to do all the dirty work. And he is the guy who's crunching heads and, you know, taking on defensive tackles. And I know he's 300 pounds himself, but he's not that tall of a guy. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot in there that merits a Ring of Honor spot. I would personally love to see that. I'm all for honoring a player like Ricard, who, 10 years in Baltimore doing some of the dirtiest work there is in the trenches, to me merits a Ring of Honor spot, especially, you know, for a fullback where it's just very hard to get a lot of recognition at that position throughout your career. I think, you know, Ricard and Juszczyk, I think there's, you know, among people who talk about football, I think there's just kind of an unspoken adoration of them for being such throwback players and representing such a position that really is dying, but still doing it at such a high level.
Well, Juice is the only other player that I can think of who was really with the Ravens for more than 2 years as the starter. The Ravens went through a whole series of players who were 1 year players, and, you know, Vontae Leach and Sam Gash was actually there for 2 years, but Lorenzo Neal played mm-hmm. 1 year in Baltimore, and a whole bunch of other guys, Alan Ricard. They never played very long at the fullback position, but they found two guys in Juice and then in Ricard who stuck there for a long time. We every year we talk about who's the potential next Ricard. And I think there are guys, and, you know, there may be guys this year even who would fit that bill. But he's a very difficult player to replace. He's just he does a lot of things. He understands the offense in a lot of ways that I think would be extremely difficult to replace.
Yeah, I was just going to say he is surprisingly adaptable, adapting to Monken's scheme and picking up his role very quickly. He's versatile in terms of, you know, where you can line him up, how you can move him, and all the different types of blocks that he can execute. I mean, the technique in his blocking is extremely sound for a guy who played defensive tackle in college. And I think that those two things combined with the intangibles of his personality and, he's kind of a veteran leader, because he's almost like a sixth offensive lineman who really knows his stuff on offense. I think all of those things just make him, you know, one of the better Ravens in recent memory who, I think probably league wide, he's gone maybe less appreciated than he should, but I think Baltimore is a very healthy appreciation for him. Just a result of the kind of fan base it is.
All right. Let's talk about what a good season is in 2025 for him.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's another 40-ish% snap share. I think a good season very much, it looks very similar to the last couple of seasons. It's, you know, a 40-ish% snap share. He's, I think, a good season for Ricard performance-wise would be he's helping out in pass protection when he's needed, but a good season for the Ravens is that he's not needed there too much. And that actually might lead to a slight downtick in his snap share, but he's still doing all the different things that he did on offense last year. He's a movable piece in the run game. You know, if he sees a lower snap share in the passing game, I think that's still perfectly fine with me, because that would mean that Rosengarten is more comfortable on his own at right tackle. And I think he continues to be, I think he and Henry are 550 pounds of muscle in the middle of the, field when they're running the ball. And I think that largely it would be a repeat from the last 2 years, where he's still an important piece of the offense and playing a healthy amount of snaps and gets one touchdown.
All right. I'll be pithy here and just to have what I've written here. He's a big part of the offense, both on early downs and when closing out games. And by the way, that's the one thing I take exception to in what you said about a good season. More snaps is decidedly good if Ricard plays them, because it probably means they're closing out games. You know,
yes.
You run because you win, not the other way around usually. So that's a big thing. And he plays as much in line as tight end as in 24. Doesn't impair the offensive creativity with his presence on the field. And he plays a role in another, at least, solid year from Henry and Jackson. I don't think we can expect a year from Henry and Jackson that would match 2024. I don't think that's a realistic 50th percentile expectation. I think they both probably had 95th percentile years. But if they have another good year where, you know, I'm not even going to try and define it in terms of yardage or whatever, where they're still the focal point of the offense and the mesh point with Henry and Jackson is the most powerful weapon in the NFL as it was in 24, then I think I'm very happy with Ricard's contribution to that.
Yeah, I think I might disagree with you on 95th percentile. I think it might be like a 85th, 90. Like I don't think it's as impossible to repeat as you think. I think it's just the first time we've ever quite seen something like that. But
okay, for who? For Henry?
For Henry and Jackson.
Okay, for the combination, or I would say either the combination. One was 95th percentile. So the combination of the two is going to be 99 plus. But anyway, we talk about that at the time. What's a great season for Ricard?
Yeah, I think a great season is he's playing maybe closer to like 50% of the snaps. Like you said, you're right that he's playing a higher percentage of snaps overall, but he's seeing less pass blocking snaps is what I would like ideally. But yes, his snap count ideally would go up because the Ravens are leading in a lot of games. I think that he has a couple more games specifically where they use his unique abilities to gash defensive lines. I think particularly those penetrating 4-3 defensive lines, he was a fantastic way to beat those defensive lines, whether it was with motion or with some of those power concepts, those traps and those whams that I was talking about earlier. I think that would be a great season for him to actually have a couple more like highlight blocking games. Like that's rare that you get highlight blocking games. I think that's cool. You know, again, he plays a big role in that. And you know, makes it clear that he's around until he retires. He will continue to be worth the veteran salary benefit until he decides to hang it up, really.
All right. That's a perfectly reasonable, great season. I said he essentially duplicates his per snap productivity from 2022 as a run blocker while still playing 50% or more of the snaps. 2022, he was at 64%. So I'm not expecting him to play that again. The Ravens continue to go to him with the lead and for a broader set of early down opportunities to support the run. That's going to be one of the more difficult things, by the way, because I think the Ravens have 6 wide receivers this year. They have 3 other tight ends they're trying to get on the field. Literally every one of their eligible receivers is 4 to make 3 at running back right now. I think only 3 are going to make the team. And every one of them needs snaps and is certainly is going to want snaps. And I think Monken is going to be very highly tempted. I think it's going to be the right decision if he does it to go to a fresh legs offense where there's rotation of five eligibles on a fair number of plays. So we're going to see, you know, Henry comes out and Hill is on and Ricard is out and they've got an extra wide receiver. They've still got two tight ends, but it's two different tight ends. You know, it's a whole bunch of things that can ways in which that can be changed. So he stays in the Ravens 2026 plans, I think, is the biggest thing as part of a great season as well. And I don't think I'd go without mentioning that.
Yeah, I think, you know, he obviously it would be great to see him retire a Raven and get in that Ring of Honor. Hopefully with a Super Bowl for all the work that he's done. You know, it's hard to imagine him specifically fitting in another offense and finding a role in another offense. I think it would really take an offensive coordinator with maybe even some connection to Baltimore or an offense that is used a fullback to because he's not the same type of guy as Juszczyk or Ingold, where he's not as agile, he's not as fast, not as much of a receiving threat. He really is a unique. I don't want to say one trick pony because I don't think that's a you know apt description of his abilities at all. But he does have, you know, the build and style of really a guy who's only a blocker.
Right. All right, Nick, great talking football. Always tell folks where they can find your material online or talk football with you if they want to.
Yeah, you can find me online at Russell Street Report. And you can find me on X at Nick, N-I-K, Noseball. I hope you agree with that if you ever do reach out to talk football. And Ken, thank you so much for having me on. This was a fantastic time.
Always fun to talk football, Nick. Other folks out there, if you're looking to do a film study short this offseason, let me know about your passion project, whatever that might be. If you're working statistically with some new metric, I'm all for discussing that and probing at it a little bit. If you have some other way you'd like to see the Ravens run the offense, run the defense, or particularly run the roster, love to hear those ideas too. Send it to me. DMs are always open, and I'll get back to you very quickly. Nick, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.